I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
Yeah, I didn't mean for this to be so angry, because we're not being angry today, so we're being happy today, I think.
What?
Huh? I don't know.
Yeah.
We're being happy? Yes?
Yeah.
All right. How was the birthday? Did you get the cake, and how was the birthday?
Yeah, it was the red velvet cupcake.
Oh, yeah.
And then Tina went by Gigi's Cupcakes and got, like, six more different kinds, like a cheesecake, all sorts, you know, like the, just the different varieties. So the high-end, the upscale cupcakes.
There you go. Now that you're a high-end guy, you have to have those cupcakes.
Yeah.
So what'd you get Megan for her birthday?
A kick in the ass. No, we got her like a spa day type thing.
That's what we used to get. We used to get told that, you know, you get something, it's like, hey, it's better than a kick in the ass, right? So I don't know where that saying comes, but I've heard it before.
When I was your age, you know what I got for a birthday present? Kick in the ass.
I got my brother's old jeans, and I was happy to get them. No, you weren't. Don't tell me that. You got them, but you weren't happy about it.
That was $125, and he was 300 pounds. So I got two pairs out of them,
and a whole string of rope too to tie those sumbitches on. Kids don't work like that anymore. I don't think they go for that.
No, kids got it easy now.
That's a little bit different.
But then they complain because they think they got it too hard.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Or gal, girl. You don't know what hard looks like.
Just shut up about that.
Yeah. You wouldn't know a hard life if it came up and bit you on the ass.
I'm thinking. Do you have any advice for parents? Let me give you a couple things that have come across my radar here in the last month. Your daughter's in her 20s. How about kids and drinking at young ages, 14, 15, stuff like that? Parents deal with that. You have any advice, parenting advice?
Yeah.
What's up?
Here's parenting advice 101. So when your kid gets about, I don't know what the age now where they get kind of like infatuated with thinking that alcohol is the way to go. But whatever that age, you sit down with them and you do take a fifth of Jack Daniels and do shots until he is blowing chunks everywhere. Everywhere. Make it horrible for him. See, this is the exciting life of being a drunk. Isn't it great? No. Just, talk to him about it. Have a good time. Don't shy away from it. You know, as we all know, kids, when you tell them no, that means there must be something really cool involved in this because parents don't want me in doing this. Show them consequences. Show them that, take them to a rehabilitation hospital where people are actually rehabilitating from injuries due to car accidents or alcohol-related incidents. Show them. Yeah, I bet you there's people out there that talk about this stuff. All the time. Nothing cool about waking up every morning knowing that you're responsible for the deaths of three people. So there's a lot of things you can do. Just be responsible about it.
Yeah, interesting. I was...
But don't put the foot down. That's the worst thing that we do as parents. I put my foot down. You will never drink again a drop of alcohol. And they're like, whatever, Dad. Whatever, Mom. I mean, my daughter just started kind of like every once in a while she'll drink what are they called?
I don't know.
The bubbly drinks, the foo-foo drinks.
I don't know. Like, what are they?
What are they called? The flavored, like a Smirnoff cooler or something like that. Like the
Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Cool drinks.
Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Right.
She drinks that and she's like, oh, this is weird, you know, and I'm like, yeah, it's called being a get a buzz. But she gets it. I mean, she, you don't have to beat it under her head. She knows. I think, you know, her problem is, I think, one, her biggest problem is having me as a dad. So the second one is, she's very mature for her age when it comes to those type of things. So she's probably the party pooper friends that go, you know, they go like, hey, Megan, what about this? And she's like, oh yeah, because that sounds great. I wound up dead with all of you guys. And, you know, they just put a kibosh on the whole. But that's the way she is.
How did she get like that? Is it just Megan? Or, because a lot of people
say, well, having a mom and dad.
Right.
Having a mom and dad like we've done.
That talk to you and...
And then, yeah, then the crazy kid being raised as, you know, the only child.
Well, you know, I have kind of a theory about parenting is that, you know, if you want to have influence over your kid, you know, don't be afraid to be a fun parent. Don't be afraid to take them places and enjoy them so that they want to hang out. They want to hang out with you. And it gives you access to them. And if you say, like, hey, you want to go to the dump with me? They're like, yeah, I'll go. Because they know something's funny, right? They know something funny's going to happen, right? We're going to stop and get lunch. We're going to go to the dump. You never know what's going to happen there. And and as a parent, that gives you access to your kids. The conversations you have as you drive down the road. I mean, and if you don't do that, if you don't cultivate that with your kid, you lose access. Then who influences your kid?
Right.
Good question, right? You were going to say something about going to the dump.
Oh, man, I used to have the best times going to the dump with my uncle.
Wasn't it? The dump, man, this place of mystery. Man, I could not go to the dump often enough as a kid. My dad wouldn't let me get out of the car when I was a little guy. He's like, what's up with this? You don't have boots on. Well, can we get me a pair of boots? No, they're too expensive. All right, you got to stay in the car because you only got tennis shoes on, and if you step on a nail, it'll go through your foot. I'm not taking you to the hospital, so I couldn't get out of the car.
Right.
Then I got to get out of the car, and it was on at the dump. There's all kinds of cool stuff at the dump. I love that place. Email Mike. Give me some advice about when you're concerned with your son or daughter's friends at the age of 15. 16, 14, and your child's being led astray. What do you do? Mike, what did you do? Oops. We might have lost him. I think it's, there's got to be some structure. I think kids, I would just make a general comment. I think kids today suffer from a general lack of structure. And I would say that across the board. They get too much decision-making authority at too young of an age and don't have a clue. And I think a lot of them are adrift. And stuff that we used to get from our parents, limits and things like that, they don't get. And I think a lot of them are adrift because of it. And they make bad decisions, and I just see these kids. Here he comes. Hello, All Marine Radio speaking. What happened?
Yeah. What's going on?
Nothing.
I don't know. It just went. When I got full bars, that it went the old beep beep.
Okay.
Beep beep kind of death.
The email's asking about if you're concerned about your friends, your child's friends, in the age of 14 to 16 years old, what did you do about stuff like that? Or did you never have to do that because you always had confidence in your daughter?
Oh, no, absolutely. We had to do that. You show them the pressure. I mean, it's kind of, that was kind of a difficult year, man. That was, yeah, I could see where they're going. Lucky for us, again, she picked it up pretty quick that these people, you know, some, not all of them, some of them were just bad decisions as far as friends go. And she reaped those consequences quick. And so, you know, she's kind of like me where she's got that ability just to like, you know what, I'm done with you and walk away.
Really? Because a lot of kids struggle with that, Mike. You know, the whole, oh, if I'm not hanging out.
Oh, no, she does.
Right? If I'm not hanging out with them, then, you know, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, and so she's kind of the same way as I am. Like, you know, I just have a few good friends close to you, and that's all you need, man. I mean, yeah, you have a lot more friends in the world, but, I mean, good friends that you can really rely on is like five. You know? Keep that, it's a manageable number. You don't want to sit here and manage, have a whole bunch of friends. I mean, my old line used to be, you know, oh, I see your problem. Your problem is that you thought we were friends, you know? Oh, okay. Here, let me explain it to you. We're not friends. Stand in line. When one of my friends quit, you may get a phone call. I wouldn't hold my breath on it. And they would, about halfway through that, they'd get what I'm trying to say to them is, get away from me. You know? I don't need you, nor do I want you as a friend. You don't fall in that category. So you pick and choose. So I think, again, you can show them how to pick right-minded people, people that think that like them. I think you'd be better off.
Yeah, it is kind of scary when your kids go, and those are high school years. For most people, that all of a sudden your kids is now in this big pool of people, and some of the people that they're friends with, you see them and you're like, yeah, that isn't good. I know bad when I see it, and that one's not good, right? And yet, I can't. They're on their own a fair amount. How do I regulate it? And again, alcohol in my family has been, you know, a bad thing. My sister died of exposure, as a complication of her alcoholism. And, you know, and so I think you do have to be willing to have some blunt conversations with your kids and just point the obvious out. See these people that struggle so much? Ding, 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 ding. On both sides of our family. What does every one of them have in common? They drink to excess. So I'm not, you know, I can't live your life for you, but I can tell you this. If you can't figure this one out, you're going to go down that road. And then we'll do that.
Yeah, you know, you look at it, and I look back, you know, people that I know, family or whatever, you know, the people that have the most problems in their life, again, you're right, it comes to alcohol. They drink too much. They don't know when to stop drinking. Well, they think that alcohol will solve their problem when it comes to drinking. Oh, I just got to drink more of this, so I'll feel better. Yeah, it's called a temporary solution to a permanent issue. So, you know, you just got to do the right thing again. Understand what's going on.
You know, and again, you know, you parent and you wonder if they pay attention. My experience is that they pay attention, and especially when you speak the truth, you know, especially when you speak, when they know you tell the truth and you're willing to sit down and spend time and talk to them about the truth, there's no way of getting around that. I mean, honestly, it's like our conversations with Luke, you know, about alcohol and, you know, Luke, man, and you know, they may not embrace it that day, but it'll bang around in their head, and they know it's true. And in my opinion, it's only a question of time before they embrace it. If they're good people, they know the truth, and they know good people. And when they hear the truth from good people, people they trust and respect, then at some point they will embrace it. Might not be today.
Right.
Might be a few months. It might be after getting drunk a few more times and it comes booming into their heads. But I think you got to be willing to engage on that stuff. And, and with them and be with them. And so, interesting. Interesting. Here's another question about drinking. Did you guys have curfews with your kids through high school? How did you handle that? Mike, you have curfews with your daughter in high school?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing I think the problem with is when they start introducing boundaries later in life, not earlier in life,
right.
And when you introduce them later in life, that's where the rebellion takes place. And like, what's this? I've never had this before. What is it? You don't trust me? You know, reoccurring theme that we always tell our daughter is, you know, when we started going on this road, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I apologize. And she's like, you know, like waiting for the, I'm like, I'm just so sorry. Because the problem here, I see the problem. The problem is we as parents give a shit about her. So that's the biggest problem that we, you know, we have parents that actually care. So that's why we sound the way we do. I'm sorry, dear. I wish I didn't care. I wish I didn't give a shit about your life or about you. That way you'd feel more free. And then, I keep going on this, and finally he's like, Dad, okay, I got it. You know, thanks.
Again, they're not, again, I don't know how it turns out when there's no standards and no consequences. What do you get when you live in that world? You get shit. We'll call him back this time.
That was weird, man.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But, Mike, what do you get when you live in a world where there's no standard and no consequences?
Well, you get jail time.
Yeah, you get shit. You get shit.
Either A, you live a lifestyle of living in small, squalor apartments. Hopefully you're not on designer synthetic drugs. You're addicted to that kind of stuff. If you're an alcoholic, you got people that don't care about you. Yeah, it's a great lifestyle.
Yeah, it's like, what world is that? It's certainly no world where you're ever going to amount to anything, unless you're just this exceptional person that has this incredible will and discipline just genetically. But again, I kind of chuckle when so and so doesn't have a curfew. Oh, really? Okay. You want to move in with them? You want to go be part of that family? Well, if your last name is McNamara and you're going to live here, then you're going to have a curfew. It's like,
yeah, that's where I start that whole.
Yeah, like what? Right?
I'm really sorry that I care. You know, I'm really sorry that I care about you. I mean, I truly, honestly, I'm just, please forgive me for caring and giving a shit about you.
Right.
You know, and like I said, then she really gets it. She's like, all right. Fine.
I got this one from one of my kids. Oh, you're one of those people that believes that nothing good happens after midnight. And my response was, have you ever heard those words come out of my mouth? Here's what I'll tell you. It's all good after midnight, okay? And someday you'll get to live and see that, right? But not yet.
Uh-huh.
You're home at midnight. Got it? Yeah. But let me tell you, someday when you get to stay out after midnight, it's a great time. It's a rip-roaring time. So I don't know what Quakers or whoever made that up, but I can tell you this, Catholics didn't make that saying up, right? Because it's fun after midnight. But you got to earn your way there, bro. You got to earn your way there. Oh, whatever, okay. You know, so... Yeah, I just don't. And, but you know, it is. You parent your kid, and then they go to school, and now your parenting is compared by them with the way everybody else parents. We didn't get in trouble for that. Yeah. Well, I don't care.
Well, you know, I think the analogy is the same. Where what we were talking about before. If you meet a good major, a good captain, he had good staff and skill. When he was a lieutenant. You know, if you meet a good kid, that means they had good parents.
Right. Oh.
You know,
and I've met some really good kids, you know, like, wow, that kid really impressed me. You know, they're like, holy crap. And you just imagine what the parents are like. Because they're probably great, exceptional people too, because people that live that type of lifestyle, normally, you know, you reap what you sow, so, I mean, it just comes out the other end.
You know, I've told this story, but Tom Seaver, right, Cy Young Award winner, pitched for the Mets, and just this big-time Hall of Fame baseball player. He was pitching for the Reds, and my dad was managing the Reds. I was going to school at the University of San Diego. Seaver, a former Marine, right, was in the Marine Reserves back during the Vietnam days when everybody had to serve. And so we're leaving the stadium, and one day, and Tom Seaver was in front of us by about, I don't know, 20 yards as we walked kind of through this tunnel and out. And then we walked in, and there's all these people that want autographs. And here's his parents, Tom Seaver Sr. and his mom, that are from Fresno, California. And so we're kind of walking by, and Tom looks at us, right? And he's like king of the world, right? I mean, Tom Seaver, he's a big shot. And he says, hey, John and Mike, come here. I want you to meet my mom and dad, right? And Tom Seaver he was a good guy. And so in front of his mom and dad, now here's this huge guy. He looks, and he becomes their son. I lost him. What is going on, man? I got to finish my story about Tom Seaver with him.
You've reached Kosselman at 817.
What's going on, man? Where are you?
I don't know. I think Big Brother's listening every time we start talking.
The CIA? I was talking shit about Brennan, so he's like dialing in. He's dialing in. I was talking shit about the Pope,
too.
Well,
he lost his clearance, so he can't do that anymore.
Are you kidding me? The deep state is letting him in a back door. Trust me. But anyway, Mike, this story is Tom Seaver. We walk out, and he says, hey, I want to introduce you to my mom and dad, to my dad and me. Mm-hmm. And so we walk up, and here's his dad in a suit and tie that he attended the ball game in. And Tom Seaver becomes, instead of this big-time baseball player, he becomes their son. Mom and Dad, I'd like to meet you. I'd like you to introduce you to the manager of our baseball team, John McNamara. John, this is my dad, Tom Seaver Sr., my mother, and he said her name. I don't remember. And then he introduced me to him, and you're like, he's their kid, right? He's what they raised.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he is a good dude, in spite of all of his fame, is because he got raised right. And
right.
And whether they're baseball players, and you'd see the same thing in Marines. You'd see squared away Marines, and then their parents would come for a visit or something, and like, here he is, now he's got his parents with him. And you walk up, you're like, hi, you know, I'm Mike McNamara. I'm the company commander here. And you see these great parents who had this great kid, and you say, hey, just, by the way, you have a great kid. And they're looking at you going, what did he just say? And then the next time you see him, it's like, I didn't really mean that. I had to say that in front of your mom and dad, so don't get crazy on me. And I laugh.
But it's a nature versus nurturing argument. Is, are good children raised, or are they just born that way? They're raised. So it's a nurturing thing. You know, good kids are raised. They're not just born that way.
No, I believe there's elements of both, because you know how you can, in families, you can raise everybody the same, but then there's that one kid that has that extra chromosome. They're crazy, right?
Yeah, so life's crazy.
so there is a bit of that in it too. I won't deny that. My mom, you know, used to put these articles from Ann Landers on the refrigerator about, you know, parenting. And because my mom struggled, because my oldest sister, you know, she's a wild child. And what had she done wrong? When I don't think she did anything wrong.
So she just looked at me like, what? Because she's got three kids in her family.
or being one.
Tina.
And definitely not all the same. But it goes back to, again, that it's how parents proportion the responsibility. Oh, no, thanks. They proportion that to each child. Is it a third to each? Is it 20% here, 10% there? Is there a disconnect? Is there something? Because, again, children aren't born. They're not born and they don't know what prejudice is. They learn prejudice. They don't understand that. So when a child sees another sibling getting something or something that they think that they establish this prejudice, this bias, that's where that stuff fosters and nurtures. And when the parents aren't good enough to pick that up right away and nip that in the butt, then then that child is going to always suffer from some kind of problem with it when it comes to if they see their sibling getting something that they think they deserve or the attention, and it's different.
So let me ask you, kids that have issues, do you think that's predominantly parenting? Or do you think okay. All right. Interesting. My mom struggled with that.
Children are not born. People are taught prejudice. Do you agree with that? They're not born with the prejudice. You don't know. You're taught that. And that's your family, and that's the social upbringing. It has a lot to do with your income. It's your society, your culture, your family, everything. But we're not born with that. We're not born with intelligence. Now, what we are born differently with is because everybody's different, is intelligence capable, like what you can achieve. Some people have a different gift when it comes to, memorization or photographic memory or remembering this or better in numbers, or better in English. Those are inherent traits due to your physiological makeup. Your physiological makeup as a human being. Those are different. I mean, some people's heart beats stronger than others. Some people have this better muscle development. We're different in those categories. And it's how those are enhanced. So I'm sure there's been kids that were born that could have been brilliant, like genius, Mensa, 160 plus IQs, but they never came to it because it was their upbringing. Now they may have been bright people in their categories or their neighborhoods or their social, neighborhoods, but what they were not capable of, they never achieved that. So the one thing I always hold true is when it comes to how we interact, we're not born with that. We're taught that. How we pick and choose our friends, we're taught that. If you don't show love and passion and all those things for each other, they're going to have low self-esteem for themselves. You don't tell their child, that they're beautiful. If you tell them, you're stupid, you're never going to amount to anything. You do that early on, then guess what? Again, you reap what you sow. They grew up as an adult, and now they have that lifestyle. They have low self-esteem. They don't have any respect for one another. That stuff breeds, So I think it's very important. Thank you.
It's interesting because, parenting, I think, very much an art, right, in terms of how do you...
Oh, it's Adam. Yeah.
How do you on one hand create esteem? How do you nurture them and at the same time have enough structure and discipline around them, right, so that they can understand limits and things like that? And again, people that go to a book for if you didn't see it in your house and understand how to practice it, and then the other part is if you're not interested in it. In mentoring and nurturing and things like that, then to me, your kids start off deficient from the get go, and it gets harder. Right. It gets harder as they get older because you haven't done it right, and now you're going to have a collision over drinking when you've never really provided the structure, provided the guidance, and now the behavior, instead of just not bringing their bike in from the rain, or instead of just not picking up their blocks, or instead of just not eating their dinner, now it's they're exercising their own will in another way. Now you're going to reel it in. I don't think it works like that.
Well, and again, it goes back to what you said earlier. It was if you have a child that has doesn't understand boundaries, right? And they don't understand boundaries when everything's normal around them, like a normal life.
Right.
How the hell do you expect them to understand boundaries when now they're inebriated? You know, the brain is chemically, you know, it has been chemically induced to respond slower, not properly. I mean, all of the stuff that goes with alcohol. And, you know, now again, your child, because on a normal day, you never stood, they don't know what boundaries are. You let them have whatever they wanted because that was just easier for you. And now all of a sudden they get inebriated, and now you expect them to behave how? And now it's whose fault? It's the alcohol's fault. Oh, okay. You know, it's society's fault. Society. You know, that's a lot of the way America is today. You know, everybody's so quick to blame society. You know, what's the problem with our kids in high school today? Oh, it's the teachers. It's our school districts. No, folks, it's your parents. They can't unfuck it. What can they do? You know, and yeah, I get it. Our hands are tied, but we're not talking about beating kids. You know, my whoopings didn't make me any better. Just made me know when to lie better. Right? Because we all did it.
Well,
you're like, shit, I just got to get better at lying.
Yeah, this getting caught stuff sucks, man, but it's not like this is
getting
good.
Caught, yeah, getting caught sucks. Because when we were kids, there was no, like, there was never, like, hey, if you tell me the truth, you're out of this.
Well,
even when you did tell the truth, you got a whoop.
Yeah.
We're like, wait a second. Well, I'm telling the truth, and I get whooped. And if I lie, I may or may not get whooped because they may believe the lie. So what do the kids choose? The lie. Why? Because at least maybe you got a 50-50 chance, whereas the other way, the honesty, I get 100% I'm going to get my ass whooped. You know? Oh, yeah. And then I get the speech afterwards. You know, it takes a stronger person to tell the truth. Yeah, it also takes a stronger ass to take that belt. And I don't want to do that.
Especially after I just shot the Tijuana trolley with a bow and arrow. But it did have a rubber tip on it, just for the record.
It was blunt. It didn't have a tip at all. It was just flat.
Oh, it was just flat arrow?
Yeah, it's a fiberglass shaft with a no tip.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't hurt.
So don't make up stories.
That wouldn't hurt anybody.
Don't paint me to be this psychopath here, okay? The crazy one.
No, I was actually giving you more credit because I thought there was at least a rubber tip on it. I didn't realize it was a fiber. I'm thinking of like some little kid wooden bow and arrow with a rubber tip on it. And it was a fiber.
Yeah, it was just a regular bow and arrow. I mean, it probably would go through you, but I mean, but it wasn't like the bow and arrows of today. It was just like a regular bow, like
right.
You see the Indians have.
I got it. So yeah, you had a choice whether to lie. But I will say this, in terms of corporal punishment, in my opinion, and I spanked my kids, but not very often because I didn't have to, because my wife and I were both on the same sheet of music. Before they turned two, when we said no, they went to the position of attention. And when they're that young, you don't have to spank them. The sound of your voice, the look on your face, right? You
yeah,
know, you grab them.
Be consistent. That's
the
key,
Mike. And that's exactly it. When you say no, and they look at you, they have to know with certainty if they take one more step towards that electrical outlet that you are coming off the couch and they're going to be unhappy. And if you do that, then it gets easier.
So here's my parenting.
Hey, no.
Yeah, here's my parenting tip for all the young people that are just getting married and don't have children yet. Here's what you do. Get a dog. And within 2 years, reflect back at a dog. Does the dog listen to you? Does the dog do what it wants? Does it respect you? Meaning, again, when you walk into the room, does it know that you're the boss? If you can't answer those yes, then maybe kids are not for you. Because you can't teach a freaking dog to do what you want it to do. Lay down. Play. Don't move or I'll kill you. You know, if they don't do that, then you're going to have some tough problem with kids is they're not dogs. So try a dog first.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Try
dog. And then obedience school doesn't count because you can't send your kid off when they're, 5 years old to obedience school. Even though I'm sure if someone could figure out how to do it with the morality-wise issues, then you'd make a fortune.
Yeah, you got to wait longer and send them to, military school or boarding school. Then you can get rid of them. But why yeah. have them? If you're going to do that, why have them? I won't say who, but somebody in my family was going to send one of their kids to military school because, I think the dad had gone away to military.
That doesn't work.
I'm like, don't.
It accentuates the issue even more.
Don't do that to your
kid.
So
it makes him a professional. Makes him a professional. If he's an ass, he doesn't listen, it's going to make him a professional at it.
Well, and I don't think it wasn't because of behavioral issues or anything like that. It's just the father had gone. This is in high school, not in college. In high school, send him away in ninth grade.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man. Who does that? What are we, barbarians? Oh, well, I thought because you were in the Marine Corps that you would be supportive of it. No, he's a little kid, man. You want to feed him to the animals? Keep him around till he's 18 and then let him do what he wants. Military school? In high school? Good God, those idiots.
I mean, we know a guy that went to a military high school. Look how he turned out.
Yeah, you don't need that.
She's
like, oh, I'm really surprised. Crazy. Yeah, let me tell you, the best parenting advice I got from my father-in-law, who had 8 kids. He said, if they don't mind you by the time they're 2, if no doesn't mean no, you are going to pay for it for a long time. And let me just tell you, and we have 4 good kids, and we did that. And you don't have to get after them. If by the age of 2, when you say no, they shut up in color, or when you say pick up the crayons, they say okay, and they get after it. It's easy at that age, right? I mean, to slap their hand and make them cry, that's nothing, right? To use your voice, hey, come here, to grab them, and then if you flick their diaper with your finger, you get this. I'm sorry. That's right.
But the consistency, I think, is the key. What we just said.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, don't raise your voice. Megan knows when she's in trouble with both me and the wife because we talk really calm and really like this, almost talking like we are right now. Or you start off your sentence with, listen, I love you. And she knows,
Something bad's about to happen right here.
She starts to look on the floor for plastic. Look on the ground, make sure she's not standing on plastic. I still love that line. What are you looking for? I'm making sure I'm not standing on plastic.
The consistency thing that Mike is the key. And I call it the crooked eyebrow test. So when you look at your kid and say, "Hey, you need to go take the garbage out," and they lay on the couch and they watch TV for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden they look at you and you raise your eyebrow. If when you raise your eyebrow, they don't get off the couch and they say, bro, no reason to go crazy. Like, what do you mean go crazy?
Yeah.
What do you mean go crazy? You with the people's eyebrow. That wasn't the people's eyebrow. That was just my eyebrow. I know. I was on my way. No need to go. It's because.
Megan's that way. I'm getting to it. Like, you turn and you go to do the reminder, and you don't do the, you just kind of give her that look, like, and I don't do the eyebrow test. I just do the chop the jaw and open the eyes a little bit and give her the head shake, like, what are you doing? And then she's like, yeah, Mama, what I'm doing, I had to do this. And I'm like, and then I play it off like, what? I didn't say nothing. She's like, no, I know what you're thinking. I heard you. And I'm like, no, babe. I was just looking at it because you're so beautiful. She's like, Dad, please, don't. I know. I'm going to do it. I promise. And then, you know, look at her again. Like, I'm doing it. Okay. They're like, what? Yeah. So, you know, they respond because they understand that, your feeling.
Well, and they do because they, as little kids, when you were dealing with things like picking up toys that you dumped out of the basket, right, or bringing your plate to the sink, or, you know, or all the little things that you do with kids, that consistency of discipline was there. And if you'll be consistent, you don't, after they get older, it's, the work's done. You did it for 2 years. Now it's on, I won't [S2] Yeah. [S1] Say it's on autopilot, but they understand when you say no, or when you tell them to do something, you'll back it up. And that's the secret to it. And it's no more difficult than that. And if you do that when they're little, it parenting is a joy. It's not so much of a fight.
So let me tell you something. Because, well, we can never get her to talk about it. That's just, but, you know, Tina started working as a county clerk for one of the JPs, one of the judges in the town.
JP is, JP is Justice of the Peace, just so everybody knows.
Right. A judge.
Right.
Otherwise known as the Justice of the Peace. So she gets to see, like, behind the scenes of the judicial, like, from the point of contact with the police officer or the department, state trooper, the sheriff's deputy, or a Department of Fish and Game guy, you name it. Anybody that gets cited for anything comes across her desk now before it goes in front of the judge. And either they pay a fine or they have to go and see in front of the judge. So it's really, you know, she comes home and she's like, I can't believe kids these days, you know, like kids are doing this, kids aren't doing this. You know, we give kids, you know, 90 days, 60 days, whatever days to accomplish something. And it's not like it takes long. It's like, you know, 6 hours. They could get online and do it in a day. But they always wait till like the last day, you know, 90 days elapse. On the 89th day, they walk in and they're like, oh, I completed it yesterday, but I haven't got the certificate. And they're like, yeah, cause it takes 2 days. Guilty. You know, you're going to go see the judge. Well, what? I did it. No. You misunderstood. You didn't do it. You're still insulting me because you waited to the last moment. It's an insult. You know, it was a test. You failed. And it hopefully some of these kids get this, that, you know, what job in the world gives you the opportunity to, like, okay, you got 90 days to close the deal, and then you try and close it on an 89th day. I didn't fire you. And you say, well, why are you firing me, Mike? Because you exerted all your effort on the 89th day, closed the deal, when you could have closed the deal on day two, and then closed 6 more deals within the 90 days. And then they get it. But it's too late.
I don't even know if that person gets it as an adult, because like you were saying, to correct that, if that's the way they see the world and they're adults, then I'm sorry. Yeah. It's you're not going to correct it. I don't think.
I always say my biggest strength was that I was lazy when I was a Marine. And people looked at me like, what? I said, yeah. My biggest strength as a Marine was that I was lazy. And they're like, explain. And I said, okay, I will. I didn't like to work. I liked to do what Michael wanted to do. In order for Michael to do what he wanted to do, Michael had to get what Michael had to be done out of the way. That was given to him to get done. So I would work my ass off, get it done. So I'd stay up, you know, I'd stay up for 7 straight days, get it done, which took about a month to get done. And now I can screw around for 21 more days and go do what Michael wants to do. And that was go find people, berate them, belittle them, make them feel bad, and then build them back up. But my strength was that I didn't like to work. So when I was given something, I just got it done. There was no reason. I didn't believe in this. Come in. Oh, we got to work between these hours and these hours. And I told some of my bosses back then, if my guys get done, they're done. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then they got done. You know, and the first day we did it, like, you guys all done? They're like, yeah. I inspect it. They're all done. All right, go home. And they're like, sure. It's 1300. All right. You that stupid? You don't understand what I'm saying? Go home. No, sir. You don't understand me twice. Boom. And then we would do that. Well, guess what? The incentive for doing hard work was you got time off. And as a Marine, you know, the most gratifying thing you could ever get is time off. So these guys were working their ass off for me because they knew that they would get, you know, and then every once in a while they'd try and do it, like, knock it all out by 9 in the morning. And I'd say, no, it doesn't work like that. Alright? I'm gonna get some skin off your ass today. Alright? Some. So, I want you guys to accomplish this. And then they get done with that, it's about 1300 again, 1400, and then they go home. And that was not every day, it was probably sometimes three times a week.
And a lot of times on Friday?
Yeah, and I always scheduled it for Thursdays and Fridays so they could relax.
Right, so
and get some more time off.
Right, they could swoop and go do what they like to do. And you link hard work and rewards, and it's the same thing you do as a parent. And Marines, let me tell you, when you do that, Marines will work their ass off. They're not that hard. But, you know.
Yeah. And I remember explaining it one time to somebody. They said something like, it was funny. You know, I don't know where else in the Marine Corps people get to be treated like that. Well, like work. They would give me a hard time. And I said, really? What about recruiters? And they're like, well, and I said, yeah, recruiters do. So don't tell me it's not practice somewhere in the Marine Corps. You know, and they're like, well, okay, you got me. You know, I give you the rope. I put your neck in it. It's up to you to go hang yourself. I'm not going to do it for you. You'll do it for yourself. You'll do it way before I ever will.
Mike, let me ask you a question. How happy were those Marines, though? They knew what was expected of them, right? You created an environment that you worked hard, but it was a lot of fun, too, because if you've ever seen Mike work,
yeah,
you do that. And then they got good at what they were supposed to be good at, and they felt that pride, and they were off early. Win.
And 99% of the time when they saw me, it was bullshit time. We would just have fun, tell stories. I'd stop in and we'd just laugh or something. We'd do something. We'd show them something. We'd teach them something. You know, that less than 1% time would come in and it was disaster. So I didn't have to do that.
Why? Because you'd already instilled the infrastructure and the discipline and they got it and
right,
they did it.
Right, because the infrastructure of work versus reward and gain was already introduced.
Right.
If I had to sit there and yell at you, then you was too stupid to even get it. If you weren't going to succeed at that, then give it up, man. You aren't going to succeed at much. But I didn't have that problem. Even the ones that were having difficulties at first, you know, what's the catch here? What's the catch? And the catch was, there is no catch. You work hard. You're rewarded.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I don't think it's any different than in raising kids, and it starts when they're really little, and once you instill that structure, and you link it to having a good time, and in my opinion, you're a fun parent that spends time with them. You know, to me, when these things like drinking, you know, come up, in fact, I was telling Colleen the other day.
My wife said to me one time when we were like, she hasn't said it often afterwards. So I don't know if she ever got what I said to her, like the meaning of it, the true meaning of it. But what she had said one time, I was, you know, we were doing something, and she looked at me and she said, "I'm not one of your Marines." I said, "No, you're right, but you know what? To be one of my Marines would be the highest honor that someone could actually bestow, because I would die for you guys."
Whoa.
And the stuff that, you know, and it drives her crazy, like, be a weekend, I'd be taking a phone call, it'd be from work. Like, what? Why? Why do you got to take, you know, like, because it doesn't stop. And she knows it. I mean, she looks back now, or she bench now. She's like, you know what? People say something, she's like, rolls her eyes like, "No, you don't understand. Being a Marine is 24/7. It never stops. Never, ever, ever, ever. And when you're in a uniform, it never stops. Even when you were out of the uniform, she would say stuff like, "Yeah, you may not be in uniform, but you're still a Marine." Or, "We couldn't go somewhere because, like, why did you have to dress that guy down?"
Well,
he needed it.
Let me, you don't understand. But
it's like someone that was gasping for air or choking on something. Wouldn't you stop and help them? Yes. If you saw someone all dipped up, wouldn't you stop and undip them? Yes.
You know, I have to.
Same thing.
Mike and I had a really cool experience yesterday. Somebody called us to thank us for it was Luke's mom called. And I gave her, after I spoke to her, I gave her Mike's number, and I said, "Hey, call Mike, please." And because I know he'll love hearing from you. And, you know, one of the things I told her is kind of very similar to what Mike's saying right now. Like, well, you have to understand, though, we don't have a choice, okay? It's not like we love those guys.
Yeah.
We love those guys, and we die for them. And so after meeting them, you know, and we're heading that direction, it's not a it's like, well, should we? It's not like that's not even part of the discussion. We own him. We've seen how great he is, and we'd do anything for those guys. And it's a no. It's not even a discussion. And it was, but what a cool conversation with Luke's mom, Libby, yesterday. Just awesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Made
my day, made my week, because I, you know, and again, you know, here's someone that's like, she gets it. She can see the tangible result is, you know, her son. She can see it in her son. And for Luke, the tangible result is he can see it in his everyday life.
Right.
You know, you gotta be able to feel, you can't ever lose the fact of what you did feel like. Don't ever lose that. To know what that feeling feels like. Because you never want to go back there, but you always want to keep in the back of your head is that's what that feels like when I'm at my lowest. You know, and it's like I used to tell, I told the sketch sergeant who left in my office one day, he's getting fired from the Marine Corps basically, failed school. And so I was laying it on a line, and it wasn't really sorted in his head when I told him, "You're done." Or I'm done and I can go home. No. You're done. Meaning, I'm going to push for an administrative separation from you from the Marine Corps. And he looked at me and said, "That means I'm kicking you out. You're no longer going to be a Marine." And, you know, he's like, "Well, but sir, I got a family." I said, "I don't give a shit. Because you know why I don't give a shit? Because you don't give a shit. And I can't give more unless you do. And if you don't give anything, how the hell do you want me to give? Being that you knew going into this family, and you still didn't bother with it, you didn't work hard at it, you failed the school, and now you want me to give a shit? You're putting this on me? No. That's not how this works. And yeah, you may call me a dick, and you may call me you for the rest of your life, when you get kicked out, I know if you ever hear my name, you're going to go, "Oh, man, let me tell you a story about that son of a bitch." But hopefully one day you're old enough to understand, man, that was hopefully the kick in the ass that I needed.
Yeah, somebody finally. But I said, somebody,
probably not. You're probably not that guy.
Somebody finally, you know, creating structure and then and
cared
then
enough about me.
Yeah, and then there being consequences. And again, just so everybody knows, it's not like this was this guy's first chance. Okay, one and done.
No.
It was not like that. It's like this is chance 6, 7, 8, 9,
no
and you're still
how weird
talking
it sounds,
about. Right.
I cared about him. I cared enough about him to kick his ass out of the Marine Corps. And people were like, what? It's because I wouldn't allow him to keep going through the status quo of not doing what he needed to do to succeed in life. Because he couldn't succeed where he was at in the Marine Corps. There's no way in hell he was going to make it in the world. No way in hell. So that introduction to, you know, and then he, man, he was like, what's going to happen? I don't care. But sir, how can you be so cold and coward? Because you don't care. If you cared, then you know what? I'm right behind you. I'll stick it out with you. I mean, I would have been right there. But you didn't care. You took off to L.A. to spend the weekend with your girlfriend. Didn't want to study. Came back Monday morning. Took the test and failed again. Your instructor told you that he would be there all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And how do I know that? Because he was with the other student all day Saturday. He sacrificed his own family for a Marine. You sacrificed him. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen anymore. You know, can't do that. So that was that big wakey moment for him. And for a lot of other people, they were like, holy crap. But that's kind of the whole, be hard on each other. Quit. People aren't victims. We're not victims. You know, we chose a profession. We chose something. We did it. Now we get to learn, live it. Now you get to cope with it. Don't try and bring your spouse or your friend into it, your world, because they don't understand. Just, and they know. I mean, my wife knows I'm broken. She married me when I was broken. I mean, I wasn't quite right. But I mean, what goes through our spouse's head by marrying someone like me? What the hell was she thinking?
Yeah,
she's
right.
Obviously a woman that's not thinking in her right frame of mind. But you know what? That makes her special. That she can put up with what, you know, hell, what I've given her through her whole life. And then still come out small and grow on that side. And a stronger person for it. And what she provides, you know, support for our daughter and everything else. You know? So again, that's where I said, everybody's got something to give.
But you cannot get there without structure and without consequences. You know, and if you do it from the time they're little and you're consistent with them, you'll give them a chance to be great people.
Repetition, correct repetition. You know, perfect practice makes perfect, boys and girls. Not practice.
Perfect practice.
Practice does not make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect.
You know, there's nothing sadder when you see a kid with a lot of potential that had just never had the structure,
dude.
And you're looking at him going, dude, you could have been so good, but you don't get it. And now some of them that are smart, when they get the structure and they can see where you have to go, they get it and they jump into it, even though and then there's others that they're too far. And it just like makes you sad because you're like,
I think we would all be more upset if two kids fail to get where. But the one kid had all of the resources, the family, and everything else to get where to get to that point, and he failed. He squandered that life, you know, money, all the opportunity. But if the other kid didn't have anything and still and failed at it, who's the bigger failure? The kid with the more resources.
Right.
I would never forgive somebody that squandered those abilities or that opportunity. And threw it out the window. You know, win the ovarian lottery and to have those capabilities. And then you're like, you see them in the news all day long. These socialites, these people that are born into money, what do? Nothing. They become nothing. You know, what a disappointment.
Right. You have everything at your feet.
If I was that parent, I would be like, whatever, get out of my life. I'm going to have a lawyer to hire to annul you from my life because you're worthless to me.
But again, they wouldn't be worthless, though, Mike, if they had somebody who provided the consistency, the structure, the discipline. That they would have been a completely different person, a completely different human being. And that's the sad part is you see the waste because and when I used to go talk to when I was in North Dakota, I'd go talk to high schools and stuff. I said, look, I'm going to give you a single piece of advice that if you follow it, you'll get promoted within the next month. And now all these kids look at me like, okay, here's you ready? Show up for work 10 minutes early and have a smile on your face. That's all you got to do, okay? Instead of being 5 minutes late and all hurried and pissed off, be 10 minutes early every day, be ready to go and walk in and say, hey, how's it going? And just talk to people. Watch what happens. And I run into this, I see this kid, I don't know where I was, but this kid comes up to me and like, hey, Mr. McNamara. And I said, hi, do I know you? He's like, no, do you remember when you came up and to Stephen Argyle and spoke? I said, yeah. Well, remember when you said, like, I'll give you some advice and you'll get promoted? I said, yeah. And he said, I got promoted. I said, I told you, man, that shit works. That's how low the bar is, man. That's how low the bar is.
Yeah.
And I said, look, you just keep doing that, okay? And you'll be the CEO of a company pretty soon. Just be better. And it doesn't take that much because it's so pathetic. And he goes, I got promoted like 3 weeks later to ship manager. I said, you make more money? He said, yeah, I'm making $1.50 an hour more. I said, boom, who's your buddy? I said, look, don't run from discipline. Don't run from being better. It's the path to being successful. He says, I won't. Thank you. Well, I'm like, no problem, bro. No
problem. I remember a young lieutenant, remain nameless.
Come on.
He came in, he was a second lieutenant, and he came out, and I remember him walking by my office and said, I got selected, gunner. And I went, what do you mean? You got selected for what? And he goes, promotion to first lieutenant. And I said, oh, that's not being selected. That's just called staying alive. And he's like, oh, son of a bitch, why do you gotta be a downer on me? And I said, because you're not that good. And if there had been a competition, you wouldn't have been first lieutenant, you would have just got as a second lieutenant. And so, much years later, he runs into me again, and we're talking, and he's a captain now, and I think, yeah, cap maybe major. And so he brings that up, and I said, it must. And he said, what did? Because I said, it is still resonant in your brain what I said, so you had to prove to me or yourself that I am responsible for your success. He's like, son of a bitch, Gunner, why do you do this to me? Why do you do this to me? You take it away from me. And I said, because you allow me to, first of all. But more importantly is, I said, because I know how people think. I know what you're thinking. You know, and I'm glad that you made it. I mean, that's great. But it's still not that hard. You know, you're a major. Ooh, you know, good job. He's this whole, like, oh, I'm going to show him. Oh, son of a bitch. And then when I brought it up to him, I said, see, you're still trying to, and he goes, no. I said, a normal person would have forgot about it. That was like 8 years ago, dude. I mean, I couldn't tell you what happened 2 months ago, much less 8 years ago, what someone said to me.
No, I just, to kind of go back to where we started, in terms of kids and drinking, to me, there's structure that should have been put in place long before that, and discussions that you have about what it is to be a better person, the things that
right.
where you're going to go in life, and the things you don't need in life. And, you know, and if you put that stuff in place, but again, like Mike said, if you try to rein it in after years of neglect, it ain't going to work. And that drinking shit, if they go down that road, is simply a sign of a lack of attention to that kid, to what that kid needs, and a lack of supervision that has probably been taking place for years. and now all of a sudden it's an issue. No, it's not. It's been an issue for a long time, you know. And so to me, if your kids respect you, if you're, and again, you know, like, in my interview with Luke yesterday, you know, when we talked about his drinking, I said, well, how much were you drinking? And he said, a case. I said, over what period of time? He said, a day. I said, I was thinking, man, that's a lot of trips to the bathroom, man. A case of beer a day after you get off work. Wow. And I said, and then on the weekend, he said, well, I like a fifth of whiskey. I said, and the beer? He said, no, it'd be one or the other. And so when again, I go back to the truth. So when you say, hey, man, you got to stop drinking, he knows that's the truth. And he might not act on it right then, but he's going to act on that. He'll act on that. So it's not hard. It's not rocket scientist. Okay? It's not rocket scientist. It's not rocket science. He fell off. I'm not calling him back. So what's the moral of the story? You gotta put in your time with your kids. And you gotta, you know, there's gotta be structure and there's gotta be consequences. And you've gotta be there mentoring them throughout all of it. And again, my experience is if you do that, it turns out good. They'll do the right thing. And believe it or not, they listen. Especially when you tell them the truth. Especially when you tell them the truth. All right. Thanks for listening today. And again, if you haven't listened to the shows from the last couple of days, I would tell you by all means, listen to them. And on Tuesday, Carlos and Juanita Lopez came on the program, and they talked about their son Carlos Jr., who took his own life after a struggle with PTSD. Listen to that. A parent's perspective, what they saw, their pain, their anguish. And then yesterday, Luke came on. Lance Corporal fought in Fallujah, came home, and crossed paths with All Marine Radio and started listening. They're great interviews. They're absolutely positively great interviews. And you should listen to both of them. So, with that said, good Thursday afternoon to you. All Marine Radio, over and out.